It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Venezuela's oil output fell by nearly a third last year.
That is what I call the death spiral of the Venezuelan oil industry.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Oil sales earn Venezuela 95% of its foreign currency. And for a country reeling from economic collapse, that money helps buy food and medicines. But government figures out this week show just how low oil production has fallen. Francisco Minaldi is a Venezuelan oil expert at Rice University in Texas.
PDVSA is in a very bad situation. It used to produce, about 3.1 million barrels in 1998 when President Chavez came into power, and about 300,000 additional barrels were produced by partners by foreign companies. Today, PDVSA produces less than 800,000 barrels of oil by themselves, and their partners produce more than 1 million barrels. So if you consider the capacities of the national company, they have dramatically declined, even though the number of employees has significantly increased.
Now, foreign oil companies still operate in Venezuela despite the industry being nationalized by Hugo Chavez. I'm talking about Chinese and Russian state-owned oil companies, Chevron, Shell, Total. What's their position?
They're increasingly in a very difficult position. They already were suffering from, the macroeconomic problems of Venezuela, the exchange rate issues, crime and others. But more recently, they have had two big problems. One is that PDVSA doesn't have money to invest. And now, more recently, the U.S. sanctions are affecting these partners, too, by not allowing PDVSA to issue debt in the U.S. In practice, a lot of both suppliers and buyers of Venezuelan oil are unwilling to do business with the oil company. It's having a significant dampening effect on the interest of investors in Venezuela.
So what's the future for Venezuela's oil production?
Unfortunately, Venezuela's oil production is in what I call a death spiral because, production is falling very rapidly. But still, Venezuela has commitments to pay debts with Russia, China, and a few other companies. It is also subsidizing massively the domestic market. And as a result of that, of course, investment is going to continue to collapse. And that is what I call the death spiral of the Venezuelan oil industry.
Francisco Minaldi, let's do the numbers. The British pound is higher against the euro as London's FTSE gains, despite a warning from French President Emmanuel Macron that if the UK wants access to the single trading market, it must pay into the EU budget and accept jurisdiction of EU courts. Now, you might have seen US satellite photos capturing at least six cargo ships breaking UN sanctions on North Korea by taking on its coal. The BBC's Cindy Su reports on one of those accused, a Taiwanese businessman, Chen Qixian, who's just been released from hospital after a suicide attempt.
Mr. Chen said he was framed by China and wanted to kill himself to clear his name. He thought he was selling oil to a Chinese tanker because the people he dealt with spoke Mandarin. But U.S. satellite images caught the ship he is suspected of chartering from Hong Kong, transshipping oil to a North Korean tanker in the high seas in October. His ship was seized by South Korea in November. As evidence grew of Mr. Chen's involvement, and to avoid problems with the United States, Taiwan's government this month put companies linked to Mr. Chen on a sanctions list. The authorities have released him on a bail of around $50,000, but forbid him from leaving Taiwan. Local media have meanwhile questioned his claims of innocence, saying he had turned off the position tracking system on his ship, which while looking like a freighter, was actually an oil tanker. Prosecutors also said he had made false claims in his export documents. In Taipei, I'm the BBC Cindy Su for Marketplace.
We've polluted our land and oceans and even filled space with our junk. There's so much debris floating around the earth, it looks like an angry swarm of insects. Holger Krag is with the European Space Agency in Germany.
Unfortunately, it's very close to Earth. So the majority of space debris is not further away than 800 kilometers.
Now, 800 kilometers is just under 500 miles. So we're talking really close to Earth.
But that's the portion of space that we use the most. This is the orbit where all the telecommunication, television and weather satellites are sitting.
Now, what kinds of stuff are we actually talking about?
It is satellites that went out of function and remain in space. It is rocket stages. It is also fragments, and that's actually the majority.
I guess a lot of people think that these old satellites kind of burn up at some point in the Earth's atmosphere, but that's not the case, is it?
The atmosphere and reentry is only a thing that helps and works for very low-flying objects. Unfortunately, in the orbits where we have overcrowding, the effect of the atmosphere is no longer present.
So the main risk here is collisions. At some point, they're going to hit each other and possibly cause a lot of damage?
Oh, we did already. There are four historical examples where we have proved that two objects have collided with each other. Every collision has the potential to create more fragments. And there was a striking example back in 2009 where two satellites collided and left more than 2,000 fragments that can be seen from ground. Our worry is that we will have one day some sort of cascading effect.
Now, lots of solutions have been suggested, everything from giant magnets to Chinese researchers looking at a space-based laser to zap debris. Is this science fiction or could any of these things actually work?
So the priority is to stop leaving additional objects behind, because today we are still adding to the problem. And that can be easily done by designing the objects properly. If this is not sufficient, we need to take additional measures, and that could be active removal, for example, by lasers from space or from ground, or by active missions that really capture an object and remove it from orbit.
What about some of this junk coming back down to Earth, as we're expecting now with the Chinese space station, the Tiangong 1?
It happens more frequently than you probably think, because every year we have 80 tons of space hardware coming back to Earth in an uncontrolled way. The Chinese space station Tiangong has 8.5 tons, so that's already quite a good portion. And that happens regularly, roughly once per week you have such an event. Of course, the Tiangong station is exceptionally larger than the object that usually re-enter.
Holger Krag. He says the chance of being hit by space debris is even less likely than being hit by lightning twice. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.